you talked about with deciding about withdrawing and then being...
Well, the very fact, you see, the financial arrangement at home was such that my dad would give me so much, because he lived there, you know, with us. Mm-hmm. And actually, the house was in his name. Mm-hmm. Well, we were both of our names, but then Dad was always the king of our castle. He was the ruler, you know. And anyway, Pop would give me so much a month, and I would, with that money, I would contribute towards the payment of the house, the food, and whatever. So I could still manage it by taking that reduction in pay. And
do you recall what the reduction was?
Oh, golly, it must have been at least 25, 30 cents an hour less. Mm. That was a lot of money. However, another thing I had to be concerned about was that, I was gone from Long Beach a year and a half, or a year and three quarters, and if I had not come back to Long Beach, I would have lost all my seniority. So that was another thing.
It was a different union.
Well, just because, in other words, even if I hadn't been working in Santa Monica, all right, suppose I'd just been out in the layoff, if I hadn't returned to my job, you know, when I had a job offer, or if there hadn't been anything offered in 2 years, I would lose all rights. That was the contract. Now, so, and if I was offered a job and turned it down, mm-hmm. you'd lose all rights to recall. That's
and
where the contract was drawn up.
But, and if you worked in another branch of Douglas, you would...
Different union, you bet.
Now, if you went to one of the other Douglas plants besides Long Beach...
El Segundo.
UAW, didn't it?
Hmm? You didn't know.
Both El Segundo and San Marcos.
Mm-hmm. I am.
I see, so you would... There was no way to maintain.
No,
your
no
rights.
Way. Mm-mm.
And but you still had recall rights, even though you were working at Santa Monica.
I had an honorable withdrawal, and there was a steward agreement provided that I should be on that recall list,
mm-hmm.
and they have to recall right in order, you know, mm-hmm. right on the line. And but however, if I didn't answer the recall within 7 days, I lose all recall rights.
Oh, I see.
And if I turned it down, I would lose all recall rights. So there were two things. The most important thing was, of course, I didn't want to lose my recall rights. I wanted to get back and get that good job, hopefully, I thought, mm-hmm. you know, see, because I still wasn't at the point where I thought I could go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't made up my mind really for sure what I was going to do, to be real honest with you. I really hadn't. And I was real unhappy about the marriage falling through and all that sort of thing. I was really upset about that. So I did come back, and my Lord, would you believe that the job they gave me, the B job, and you see the union was in there starting to really be pretty strong, because obviously the job they gave me was definitely a B job. And it was cutting chains for gas caps for the B-26, and I mean thousands of them. And what I had to do, I sat down.
Oh, it was a bench job.
It was a bench job. I sat down. Here's this workbench, and they bring out a little old board with two nails, you know, measured out for so much. And here you've got all this linkage chains, and you put it on here to here, and then you take a pick of dikes, and you cut it. And thousands of them. Oh, my God. It was just really, I had blisters on my hands. I finally got so I had to wrap, you know, my fingers. And they weren't, you know, in those days, even though I was a young gal and everything else, too bad, you get that job done. You don't like it, too bad, you know, see, that's the job you're hiding to do. You want the job? There it is. And they didn't have that many jobs in the plant then either.
Uh-huh.
No, sir, you were lucky to come back.
So that was, you're just by starting that time it would be 47?
46.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute now, sorry about that. I came back in 47, right. Mm-hmm. 47. I came back in 47. That's right. Came back in 47. And when I came back in there, like I say, my goodness. And would you believe I came back to the same building that I left? But they only had one little section, about one-eighth of it, they had, you know, lit up. And they had big barricades up so you couldn't go outside of your little area there. And it was the spares project, I remember. All we were doing is building spares, selling spares, spare parts for mm-hmm. different model aircraft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, finally, then when I got my A back, you know, finally got to my A, they got larger work in there, more like larger component parts,
mm-hmm.
the spares, you know. And I was familiar with the work, and so I was, when it came time for my seniority, I was given the job. And so I then...
Why don't we stop in terms of the work part at that point, and then next time focus on your work and union stuff from that point.
That's when I started to really get active.
Yeah.
That's when I ran for office the first time, and that's when I got married.
Okay,
again.
Why don't we stop the work things at that point and go back to some of the daily life and social things during the war years,
mm-hmm.
and pick up anything else about the war years period
mm-hmm.
that we
all right, okay,
cover.
Uh-huh.
We talked a little bit about how your life was organized in terms of leaving, getting your daughter ready for school, coming back. Now, when you were working, say, 10 hours, did you would come home and then actually make dinner, or would your father and the children get things all together?
It depended. Now, what we tried to do, like I say, we'd work it out. Sometimes I would cook, and sometimes the girls would cook. And if it was, I would shop once a week, and if anything had to be in between, why then Rosemary or little Mary Beth mm-hmm. would shop,
mm-hmm.
and they would cook, you know, basic things. But then I would sometimes like cook one night I'd cook like a big casserole thing, and then the next night all I'd have to do is heat it, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. Or if it meant to cooking meat, if we did have meat, you know, we had stamps, you know, in those days. Why, I would generally do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls were really good. They had to learn just like mm-hmm. I had to learn, you know.
What role did your father play in the running of the household?
Well, Pop, he saw to it that the kids got off to school. That was a, you know, so I didn't have to worry about that. They got off to school okay. And then when they come home and everything like that, and he was there all the time if they needed him. That was a real important thing.
Mm-hmm.
I never could have done all that. You see how couldn't possibly
mm-hmm.
have accomplished the things that I did without my dad's help the way he did. And he was, as you can see, like for my daughter, you know, he was both father and grandfather.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
And she idolized him. Oh, she thought he was just absolutely great. And little Rosemary now. Rosemary, my younger sister, she resented the fact that my dad was strict. Dad was strict. He insisted that she come home after school and that sort of thing, you know, and that she try to help with the housework and things like that, and that she do her share of things, and she couldn't run off. And when she was around 12 years old, she had these girls, you know, and they'd want to go off and meet the boys and things like that, and so my dad was pretty strict about that. So what happened was that, now this happened when we were living up there in Poppy Street, she ran away from home, and she was just 12 years old.
You would have thought he would have learned after
me. After me.
You.
After me.
Now, and what happened then when she ran away?
Oh, my God. I was just, when they finally picked her up, and of all places they picked her up, she's with another girl, but she'd been down the pike. And, you know, that's when the sailors just mm-hmm. really, you know, and she had, she'd met some fella down there she liked real well, and they were sleeping, you know, in alleyways and things like that. It was terrible. And so they picked her up. The juvenile authorities found her and everything else. And then they put her in a. She had to be in a. She was sent up to. It was a convent, Church of the Good Shepherds, in Los Angeles. It was actually a school, but there's a convent adjacent to it. And so, being at our Catholic background, you know, they decided that she had to have better supervision, you know, because. With my working and everything else, I couldn't be there, and poor Poppy did the best he could, but it wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
She had to have supervision. So she was up there, so then we used to see her whenever they would allow us to see her, and I felt guilty about it. I felt like I didn't do the right job, you know. I was supposed to take the place of my mother, but I apparently didn't do the right job, so I felt very guilty about it. I really did, even though I know my dad had a lot to do with it, but I still felt that I might have been able to prevent it, and I felt very badly about it. I really did. So then I would go up and I would see her all often as I could, and I would take her presents and things. And Mother Superior used to really bawl me out and say I was just doing too much, spoiling her. And I remember they were going to let her come home on Christmas, so I brought her home for Christmas, and just for the holiday, you know. And I'll be darned, I had a ring that had been given to me by my husband, and I had some cash I used to keep in my top drawer so that the kids, you know, if I wasn't there, they could either buy or whatever. That's, you know. Cash or whatever, like the helmsman and things like that. And I remember I had quite a bit of cash because I think I had to pay some bills. Would you believe I came home from work? All that money was gone. My rings were gone. A lot of my clothes, and she took off.
Mm.
And we didn't hear from her till she was 21 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And I tell you, I used to have nightmares about maybe, you know, she might have been picked up in a white slave market, you know, because it was so close to the border, or maybe she was killed, or maybe she was a prostitute somewhere. God knows what, you know. And, you know, I went through the tortures of the damned until finally we got word. She's 21 years old. She wrote to me.
When was she run away? How old was she at that point?
Let me see. About how old was she? She must have been about 14, maybe. Maybe about 14. And what had happened was that this fellow that she had met, you know, that she liked real well, he took her, they ran off, and went back to New Ulm, Minnesota. You know, one of the police couldn't find her. They had all states and, trying to find her, you know, for, anyhow, it was just really something. Private investigators, everything. So anyway, he took her back there, and they got married back there anyway, and he was in the service, of course. And so she stayed back down that little town, and that little town, they spoke German, you know, it was all German, so she learned German, and apparently, you know, she lucked out because his mother took care of her, and she stayed back there. And he was still in the service. So when she got a hold of me, you know, here she was the mother of a child, married and the mother of a child back there. And it was a real traumatic thing, I'll tell you.
How was it for your own daughter then? Because up till that point, she basically had someone else in the house besides your father.
That's
after
right.
After she ran away, how was it for your daughter?
Believe it or not, my daughter, she started taking the role of the mother of the whole darn family. She'd be the one to say, now, Mom, you know, if you're too tired, why don't you just go to bed, you know. And no kidding, she would do that. And I used to wear about, I used to have about 3 pairs of shoes, you know, and I'd polish all 3 one night, and I'd wait a couple nights, and so she'd say, well, Mom, I'll polish your shoes, you just go to bed, Mom, you know. And then she started treating my father like she was the mother. No, not Grandpa, you know, tonight you're going to have sausages, but you can't expect it every night, Grandpa, things like that, you know. And it was really great. I'm a very fortunate woman, because it worked out. It could have been the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And she was such a good kid. She'd come home from school when she was supposed to, although I was very careful not to be too strict with her. She had a little girlfriend across the street, you know, and every all sort of thing, and I used to take them places. And when I was single, and if I had a boyfriend had a boat, we'd take the kids all, you know, and I tried not to be too strict with her, and yet still bring her up a good Christian, you know, moral life. And would you believe that the first fellow that she started dating, she married him. But I didn't push into that. But, you know, I really didn't want her to, because I wanted her to go to college. She wanted to go to college. At one time, she wanted to go to college, and she wanted to be a nurse, too, and all this sort of thing, you know. And so I said, well, honey, you know, I'm going to start saving that way, and if that's what you want, that's super. So she met this fellow when she was 17. She hadn't graduated. And he wanted to give her a ring. I said, oh, no, she's not even, she wants to go to college, you know. Oh, no, you know. And she says, oh, well, Mom, she says, I think I would like to, you know, I would like to get married and have a family. She says, you know, I'm an only child. And she says, I want to get married and I want to have a family. Honey, you're not even through high school yet. And so he finally was discharged from the Navy. So he went back to his home in Montana. Well, he kept running back and forth. And he kept down and see her and he'd send her presents and everything else. And she wouldn't go out with anybody else, you know. So finally, they said, well, they want to get married. I said, well, you're not even through high school yet. And she says, well, Mom, we want to get married. I said, well, look, honey, I'll tell you what. If you still feel the same way about him after you graduated, okay. All right, fine. Well, of course, she graduated when she was 17, so, you know, the few months I could have held her at home after 18, she could have married anyway. But I finally had to go along with it. So when she graduated, they were still in love and everything else, and so we flew to Montana, and she got married there, and she's still there. But everything turned out fine for her. Now, if she hadn't met this fellow, and if it, you know, who knows, I don't know what happened. But what happened to my little sister seemed to, Mary Beth started taking charge of things. She was going to be the one to take care of Pop and take care of me and all that sort of thing. She's very much that way.
Now, how were the household responsibilities handled? You talked about them shopping. What about things like laundry?
Oh, boy, I always did that. Up until when Mary Beth got older, like in her senior year, you know, and she would iron my blouses, because at that point I didn't have to wear coveralls anymore. I wore blouses and you know, slacks. I'm telling you, I would put out a laundry that wouldn't quit, you know, on the weekends. I would do all the heavy cleaning, household, and all the laundry, everything like that. Every week I did that. But I was young.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was raised. My gosh, I had to do
yeah.
it. See, taking care of all those kids. And, you know, I didn't think too much of it. I really, really did. I thought that, you know, it's what everybody's supposed to do. I didn't know any better.
When you were working 10 hours a day then and 6 days a week,
mm-hmm.
Usually, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
And you were day shift the entire war period?
Yes, I never worked any. In fact, all my years at Douglas, I have never worked anything but day shift.
Mm-hmm.
However, for instance, in Shakedown, the DC-10, I'd come in at 2 o'clock in the morning, pre-shift, you know, and even turn the lights on that big building out there, so that Shakedown for the DC-10. And many times I'd work many times I worked two shifts, 16 hours. I'd come in and I'd be there at first. I'd have lunch with the second shift, and, you know, lunch with the people on the second shift, and maybe go home at 10, 11 o'clock. Then get back in the morning in time for the next shift, sometimes 6 o'clock.
But that was
always one shift.
That was
the no, yeah. This is after the war. No, during the war. During the war, I worked nothing but day shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because of the job, the particular job that I was on, you know, the special assignments that worked out well for them,
mm-hmm.
but that I was able to do that.
Yeah. By the time you got your layoff notice, Betty, what, had you moved past the fabricator's job? You talked about being the C lead when the union came in at the time of layoff. You were in training.
Yes, but that was before the union, honey. After the union came in, I was no longer, there was no such thing as C leads then. Then there was different classifications.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a classification within an occupation. Like if you were an assembler, you have an A and a B, a class within an occupation, okay? See? But as far as a lead man's concerned, there's only one lead, and that lead is a classification within an occupation. You have A lead for an assembly, and according to our contract, you may not have more than 25 people. But that lead would be over maybe two positions of the ship. Or if you were in a sub-assembly, you know,
mm-hmm.
you might have regular jobs assigned to you, say 50 or 150 sub-assemblies that you would build, you see? But your lead man would be over a certain group and from that classification.
I see.
Have to be from that classification.
But which was not true before the union.
No.
Now,
in seniority order.
In
seniority order, too. During the war, it wasn't that way. During the war, they picked out people that they thought that they wanted. The seniority had nothing to do with it.
And once, the lead person would also continue to do their own assembly work?
In some cases.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases. It depended upon if it was just a repetitive type thing, many times they would do a little side job.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was a lot of complex installations and that sort of thing, the lead man would be so busy assigning work, you know, and following through on it, and reporting completion, and getting inspection, that sort of thing. It's strictly, you wouldn't touch a gun or a bucking bar. I didn't for years after a while. Lord mm-hmm. knows. Strictly administrative work.
Yeah. But then the lead person would be CBA, then the next would be the foreman, basically. Is that the way it works?
Now. Like an assembly right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, during the war.
During the war. Oh, during the war. During the war. You had whatever classification, and it was just a name.
Yeah.
Categories.
Mm-hmm.
Just a name, period, okay? You were whatever you were, and then came your C lead,
mm-hmm.
then your B lead, then your A lead, then came your foreman,
mm-hmm.
or your general foreman. Then you became administrative. That's what it was.
Now, up until the point that you became C lead, do you recall other women who were leads in your area there?
No.
You were the first?
Yeah. They were just, they had so many people, so many. They were desperate.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to find a go to the women.
Uh-huh.
They were desperate.
And until the union came in, though, the leads were not by seniority.
Oh, no. No, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
No. In fact, you know, some of the gals during the war, they become so proficient, they were a lot better than the men, all the
mm-hmm.
men that were there, really.
And when you received your layoff notice, were there other women who were still working on the skeleton crew, or were you one of the few?
There were a couple of my women there, yes, I remember. Mm-hmm.
And what, did they retain recall rights and come back, do you know?
Yes, one gal did.
Mm-hmm.
Very few, but there was one gal that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What? Tell me a little bit more about your social life before you were married.
Mm-hmm.
Who your friends were, the kinds of friendships you made with both the men and women in the shop,
mm-hmm.
and the kinds of activities you would engage in.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I was friends with this girl that I met when I was doing practical nursing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she worked in a complete different area of the plant, so I wouldn't see her at all during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But we would get together quite often, and then I know that I met a couple of different men who were friends of her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I was introduced that way. Mm-hmm. And but a lot of it would go to the USO. We go to the USO a lot. We would, you know, go there. And well, it was one in Long Beach, but the one in Los Angeles was a really nice one. And I would do that for social activity. And then I also met a lot of union people, you know, people who were organizing and that sort of thing. But I wasn't really into it that much. I wasn't interested in getting that close to them. You know, all I was interested in is getting the contract there. That's what I was interested in. And so as far as social life, that's about it. Mm-hmm. Really didn't have too much of anything else. Now, we used to have, for entertainment and things like that, we used to have some of these big bands and different groups that come out to the plant in our lunch hour. They perform for us and things like that, you know, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty dull, doesn't it?
Well, it seems to me everyone was so busy. There wasn't a lot.
That's the whole
time.
Thing. See, mm-hmm. you know, and especially, good Lord, you're one day off. You had to, you know, clean and wash and all that sort of thing, and it was really something. I'm telling you.
What, how about rationing? How did it affect you?
All right, now, as far as rationing was concerned, I know that it used to be, the only thing I remember is that we never could get enough meat because my dad was a meat eater, even though we kids weren't, dad was, and so we just never could seem to get enough meat. And as far as the rest of the foods was concerned, we made it all right. We, you know, not too bad at Phil. And I remember that as far as gasoline was concerned, once I had my little brother's car, I had to see rationing because I was a defense worker, you know. But that didn't allow for a lot of running around. But I remember that I used to try and save whatever I could because when my little brother came home, you know, from when he was on leave from the Merchant Marine, I wanted to have enough gas in the car, enough coupons to give him so he could have that too. And another, I used to, cigarettes and booze was so hard to buy in those times. And I, believe it or not, I didn't, you know, I never drank or smoked until about 35 years old. Never, isn't that crazy? And even go out to these different places and everything else, you know, it seems so strange because I didn't drink. But anyway, I'd buy it whenever I could possibly get any cigarettes or any booze. I remember there was one liquor was called the Three Feathers, and it was terrible. They tell me it was really terrible. And I would buy it up, and I'd hoard it away from when my little brother came home, you know. When he came home, then I had gasoline for the car and booze for him, and I also had always keep my eye open for real attractive girls out the plant, you know, that were young and not married, you know, so you have a good date when you come home, too. And, I don't know, maybe when I say that the far as the racing was concerned, we always had to hustle. You always had to scrounge around for everything, you know, it wasn't that easy.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, I think that we've had to do it all our lives, so that's another reason why it probably didn't seem too, you know, that
mm-hmm.
bad,
mm-hmm.
really.
Did you have any sicknesses during the period? You talked about some of the minor accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything that kept you out for long stretches?
Never did. In fact, you know, I remember that I went 7 years, and 7 years without any vacation, any time off at all. That was mainly because, you know, even you know, before I got married, everything else, as the money part of it,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford it, and we wanted so badly, like even to take a vacation or travel or anything, cost a lot of money. And we were like buying a refrigerator. But 1 year before I got my vacation check, this afternoon was in, oh boy, get that vacation check and everything else. But what we were looking forward to the fact that we were going to use that to buy the refrigerator, you know, and that was a big deal. So
mm-hmm.
so what if you didn't have a vacation? You could make it have a day off on the weekend or whatever, and that was super. But to be able to buy a refrigerator and the stove, I remember the same thing, you know, see?
Mm-hmm.
And that was just great.
How did you feel in terms of, you had a pretty hectic schedule.
You bet.
A 60-hour week, basically, the household responsibilities.
Well, yeah.
Physically and emotionally, do you recall how you felt during the period?
Well, I remember that I used to get, you know, very, very tired. Very tired. However, I felt good about what I was doing because I felt like I was helping out the war effort.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I felt like I was doing something good there, and I also was very pleased that I was able to earn enough money to be able to have my little girl there with me and to support her. To me, that was just great. It was just absolutely super, you know. And once I got over that the fear that I had that the sabotage, that they were going to put me in jail for sabotage, and I finally learned how to shoot that rivet gun, so I knew darn good and well it wasn't, you know, when I pulled the trigger, the set wasn't going to go through the skin. I felt pretty good. I really did. And I felt really good about the way the whole thing. I felt crushed at the end of the war when those big, beautiful B-17s are going to be all scrunched together, you know, and I thought, as I think about the workmanship, I thought of all the taxpayers' money that went into those things. It was just terrible. So, and I felt, we've been on such a high for so long, so many months and everything else, and such a terrific, strange letdown that everything was over now. You know, people would never see again. Mm. You know, and I never knew for sure if I was going to go back to work in the plant. I didn't know about the marriage thing. I didn't know any of those things, how it was going to turn out, you know. And I hadn't been able to save money.
Okay.
No, uh-uh. You know, I hadn't been able to save money. In fact, it was a very kind of frustrating situation. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. And I think that's another reason why when I finally came back to the plant in 47, and I'm look, I might as well get in here and learn every damn thing I can and get the best job in this plant that anybody can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I set out to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I was determined I was going to do that. As long as I wasn't going to be able to go back to school and go in nursing,
mm-hmm.
I might as well go in there and get all I had, you know. See?
And at the time of the layoff and all during the war years, you had in the back of your mind, you weren't sure about nursing.
That's right.
You weren't sure about marriage.
That's right.
Sure about school.
I really wasn't. I didn't know for sure what was going to happen. I didn't know for sure what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult thing. And like I say, the thing that kept me going was the fact that I knew that what I was doing at the time, I felt proud of what I was doing, you know. And I felt like I was going to help
mm-hmm.
the war effort, and that was good. And
do you recall any, at Douglas, I can't get too clear a picture. At Lockheed, I know they have these, the women counselors who, you know, if there were problems with the kids in the home or health problems, whatever, who would be assisting. Do you recall?
Yes, they did have.
Did
mm-hmm.
you have any contact with counselors?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. But I think the only time I had to go to a counselor was when that I wanted to get some leave. You know, wanted a few days off,
mm-hmm.
and no vacation at that time. So I had to go up to the counselor and say why I wanted
mm-hmm.
to do it. And they're very, very helpful that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they did have counselors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall any of the people that in the media area that I worked with, you know, that any particular thing that stands out in my mind, excepting that for sure, whatever they had would not take the place of a good, solid contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Where you had a legal
mm-hmm.
Option and you had coverage that way.
Yes,
they did.
Is there anything else from that war year period that you can think of that we haven't covered or that?
Well, you know, we were very patriotic. I mean, I took part in bond drives.
Mm-hmm.
I took part in the blood bank and all those things like that. We took part in everything like that, everything that we could to help the war effort, you know. Well, that was the uppermost in our minds,
mm-hmm.
really. And most of them. I mean, there was some people, like I say, there just to have a good time and whatever, you know. But nothing during the war years. It was just really and truly a work thing.
Mm-hmm.
After that war was over, that was a different story, you know.
Did you, because I know one of the things that seemed to happen looking at the overall picture was that, whereas in 43, 42, when the women first came in, all through 43, there wasn't that much trouble with absenteeism and that much turnover, but people started getting, I mean, keeping up that high pitch of activity became more and more difficult the longer it went on.
Oh, yes, you mean during the war,
that,
before the union came in, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it was very hard. It was really very hard. I really and truly, had it not been for my father being at home and for my little girl, you know, and of course Rosemary before she did run away, without that, I could not have.
Mm.
I couldn't have maintained it. I just couldn't have done it. I couldn't have taken responsibility by myself for a child out there like that. I couldn't have done that. No, it would have been impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I say I couldn't have done it. Maybe I could have. Who knows if you're really put to it. But it would have been very difficult.
Did your friend have children?
Yeah, she had a teenage daughter. Hers was about 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't have any problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, see? Because when she was working, she was a cook. That's how I met her at one of these homes, the nursing homes. But she wasn't a live-in. She'd come in the morning and go home at night. So she didn't have any problem that way. She didn't have any
mm-hmm.
problem that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you have other friends from the plant, or was that your...
She was my closest friend.
Mm-hmm.
She was my closest friend. And I didn't have, like I say, a lot of time. And, I met some... There's other girls there, too, that we used to get together and... we would go out for dinner,
mm-hmm.
things like that, you know, a bunch of us girls. There weren't a lot of men around, really, you know. ones that were at home. They were either 4F, you know, or they were all gone. So we gals used to get together and go out and have dinner and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that were married, you know, and even some of the ones that were single, they were a little bit afraid of going out in the town. The older ones were.
Mm-hmm.
We younger ones, it didn't bother us a bit, you know. Didn't have any problems, but you didn't have problems during the war like you do now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness, you know. A young gal, she's taking her chances by going out by herself now in some of these places, even two gals.
One last question before we stop for the day. Do you remember much older women?
Yes.
Being on your cruise.
Oh,
and
yes.
What were people's reactions to them? How was their work?
Well, now, you know, the bosses used to get very impatient about that. Mm-hmm. They'd ride them just unmercifully. They really would. And I know that these women, they would, you know, like I say, they would try very, very hard to do a good job. And I know some of the young girls used to be really impatient with them and all that sort of thing, you know, but that